Take your Bibles and turn to Genesis 13. I'd like to do this whole chapter with you this morning. And we're moving right along through the life of Abraham, Genesis chapter 13. And one of the things that I've established, but you know, we've had Easter and all kinds of other things that have gone on. The question is, when was Abraham declared righteous? And it seems to me that the conversion of Abraham actually takes place in Genesis 15. And at that point, Abraham is in his mid-80s. He has a clear understanding that he and Sarah are not going to have children. So God appeared to Abraham four times. It was actually the fourth time that Christ appeared to him in Genesis 15, where Abraham now has nothing. He is not going to have any kids. He's been preaching all of his life that God's going to make him a great nation. There's over 3,000 people that have attached themselves to him. We're going to get through that. But it's at that point, when he has nothing, that God declares him righteous. So Abraham, by faith, believed what God told him in Ur of the Chaldees, and he left not knowing where he was going, although the general direction was the land of Canaan. We know that from chapter 11, the last part of 11. They headed out and stopped at Haran on their way to Canaan. And then when he entered Canaan, he was 75. And there was a second time that God appeared to him, and then God appeared to him after he separated from Lot in this chapter, and then in chapter 15. So what we have here is an interesting development of Abram actually having the emptiness of religion and the emptiness of being secular. There's a map on the back that I printed off for you that has some additional things. You can follow along on that. This is good for this week. It's good for next week. I always like maps that you can get more than one use out, since we're very judicious with our color copies. So in chapter 13, verse 1, if you'll look there with me, and eventually I will put together a handout of all of the handouts, so you don't have to wonder, did I miss something or what? And Abram went up from Egypt. Remember, he was sent to leave his kinfolk and to be a blessing. He did anything but be a blessing to Pharaoh. In fact, he became a curse word in Egypt for how he treated Pharaoh. And Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife, and all which he, which was to him, and Lot was with him, to the Negev, or to the southern part of Israel. The Negev is translated the wilderness or the desert. And Abram was very rich in livestock and in silver and in gold. So while he was in Egypt, his wealth exponentially increased. We don't know how long he was there. He was there long enough that Pharaoh inductively learned that everybody was deathly sick. You know, this is like the person who brought you COVID. How many of you know who made you sick with COVID? Yeah, so that's the way Abram was. Except Abram and the Jews that were with him, the people that were with him, weren't sick. It was only the Egyptians that were sick. So he's very wealthy, comes back. And he traveled, verse 3, journeying for his journey from the Negev, as far as Bethel, as far as the place which was there, that it was where his tent was in the beginning, between Bethel and between Ai. I've shown you where those are on the map. So he's traveling up from Egypt, moving south, or going from the south towards the north, until he gets to Bethel and Ai, to the place of his altar, of the altar which he made there in the beginning. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now, calling on the name of the Lord means to preach. It means to communicate to the inhabitants of the land the truth that God had made known to Abraham. So at this point, if you look in Abram's life, you don't see any prayer, you don't see any seeking, you don't see any asking of the Lord. You know, you don't see any waiting on the Lord for direction. His life at this point is essentially a secular one of emptiness, and he was a preacher. So he's busy telling people about the creator of the universe who has revealed himself to him and the message that God gave to him in Ur of Chaldees. But at this point, Abram in his life still believes that it's a cooperative effort. He and God make a great team. When God revealed himself to Abram in Ur, he was probably young and full of spit and vinegar, and said, sure, God and I will make a great team. We are going to change the world. We've got this. All right, and time goes on, and people believed the message. Abram was very persuasive. Lot believed the message. Terah, his father, believed the message. And they left along with him. They were believers. They traveled right along with him. But Abram himself still thinks that what God does, he does in cooperation with the person. It's not all of God that I contribute to God's blessing and God's promises. And that's the way a lot of people are today in the church, that they believe their good works and they play a significant role in them getting to heaven and them being useful to the Lord. So I want to go on to the next section, verses 5 through 7, but this is that emptiness of not having that personal relationship with the Lord. And yet Abraham, as an unbeliever, is still following the Lord's leadership, the Lord's direction. The Lord has given him instructions and he's following that out. And God is blessing him for that. We'll talk a little bit at the end about how the different theological systems approach this subject. There are real dangers in the infighting. So let's look at verses 5 through 7. And also to Lot, the one traveling with Abraham, there were flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to support them for the dwelling together, because there was very many of their possessions, they were not able to dwell together. So this is a byproduct of coming up out of Egypt. Pharaoh, who is rich in gold and silver and herds and flocks, he enriched both Lot and Abram because of taking Sarah as a wife and putting her in the harem. Now as they come out, not only did Hagar go with them, but they can no longer dwell together. Now notice verse 7. There was contention or strife between the shepherds of the livestock of Abram and between the shepherds of the livestock of Lot. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite at that time were dwelling in the land. This is the second time that Moses highlights how dangerous it is in the land of Canaan. The Canaanites are dwelling in the land. So infighting is a real problem. And in verses 8 through 13, we'll see the separation between Abram and Lot. And Abram said to Lot, let there not please be strife between me and between you and between my shepherds and between your shepherds, because men of brothers we are. They're relatives. So we shouldn't be fighting. We should be getting along because we're kinfolk. Is not all the land, verse 9, before your face? Please be separated from me, from over me. If you go to the left, I go to the right. And if to the right, I will go to the left. So you have your choice. Even though there were also other tribes living in the land, as Bedouins, they had freedom to travel. Verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, because all of it was well watered before the face of the destruction of the Lord, Sodom and Gomorrah, like a garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. Zoar is 5 miles south of where the Dead Sea is today. So I can't give you a good map of this period of history. My best guess is that this is one of the rivers, of the four rivers coming out of the region of Eden where the garden was. Remember, there was headwaters coming and it divided into four rivers, two of which are still in existence. And then I believe it's the Pishon ran down south and made its way into Saudi Arabia and made a circular pattern. It traversed for itself, meandered, if you would, in the land of Saudi Arabia. So this is before Genesis 19. So the Jordan River Valley didn't have a Dead Sea. Okay, it was a very verdant pasture, well watered, like the Garden of God, if you would. It was incredible pasture land, and also in that area is Sodom and Gomorrah. This was also, there was a king's highway that ran through this whole way that would have taken one down to Egypt, probably the route that Abram came back on. And Lot chose for himself, verse 11, all the plain of Jordan. And Lot set out, we'd say eastward in Hebrew, it's actually from the east, but it's eastward. And they spread out a man from over his brother. So the two companies split, and Lot went towards Sodom and Gomorrah, to the well-watered plain. And Abraham was dwelling in the land of Canaan, and Lot was dwelling in the cities of the plain, and he pitched his tent as far as Sodom. And the men of Sodom were wicked persons and sinners against, very much sinners against the Lord. So my application here is, you know, you see Abraham, the unbeliever at this point, at least the undeclared righteous Abram, he is making wise choices, following the Lord's leadership, and Lot, the believer, is making terrible choices. My application here would be from 1 Corinthians 15:33, don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Lot is going to lose everything, having believed the message God gave to Abraham. Now, because of his orientation and his worldview, that this is a great place to live, he moved into the plains and started in the region, and then eventually pitched his tent next to Sodom, and eventually ends up in Sodom. We'll come to the history of Lot if we continue in Genesis. But essentially, you know, don't throw your lot in with evil people. That's my pun for the day. Don't throw your lot in with evil people. If you know that a person is evil, don't throw your lot in with them. What effect did Lot have on the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah? Was he able to change the world? And the answer is no. So my sermon title, You Can't Change the World. God will bring to you individuals that are willing to hear the message of the gospel. Give it to them. They'll believe. Some of them will believe. And God, by his Spirit, will begin to change them. But once you get in this category of groups of people who are serious sinners against the Lord, very much sinners against the Lord, wicked persons, they aren't going to change. One of our interns many years ago came through here, and he was and his wife were very talented people. They're more talented than Sarah and I. And they went to a large church in a different state, and they'd been there for about 10 years, and he called me up, and he said, Marv, what do I do? I have a group of men in my church who are homosexuals, and I know it. One of them was arrested in a neighboring town and put into jail for public public crimes. What do I do with it? And I told them, look, there's only one thing you can do, and that's exercise church discipline and put all of them out of the church, lock, stock, and barrel. Otherwise, your church is going to continue to be judged, and you aren't going to have the blessing of the Lord. They won't get converted. You're going to have to put them out of the church. And he never did. And the end of that story was personal tragedy for himself and for his family. It did not go well. So the warning here is don't think you can change the world. How did that work out for Christ? How well did he do in influencing the leadership of Israel? How successful was he in converting the Jewish society to the truth of the Old Testament? And the answer is, he was a complete and total failure on that level, and they crucified him. So what's it going to take for Christ to be successful in this project? And the answer is 7 years of unbelievable tribulation and the death of 90% of the Jews, and only 10% will be the remnant that believe in the Messiah. So that's how he's going to change the world. He's going to judge the socks of it. And then let's go to the millennium. What happens after the 1,000 years are up? Oh, there's a rebellion that the world has never seen. This is your Psalm 2, that the nations gather on the plain of the earth. And let's throw off the Messiah and the bonds of the Messiah. Let's finally get rid of this creator and his stupid son and be done with him. Psalm 2. God has them in derision, of course. We don't know how that all transpires at the end, other than that the world is destroyed by fire. But my application is here, don't be deceived. While you have friends that are unbelievers, you should think about them in terms of 1 John 5, that you snatch at them like a hot coal. If you're going to, many of you barbecue, you get the charcoal, the briquettes, nice and rosy red, right? If you're going to snatch one of those, if you're going to get one of those out of the fire, what do? Snatch it quickly. Give them the gospel. But it's only the Lord that can change the person and change the heart. And don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Be real careful with this. Don't throw your lot in with evil people. Now, the footprint of the land is given to us in verses 14 through 18. Verse 14. Therefore... he said, the Lord said, and the Lord said to Abram, after he had spread out from Lot, from the attachment with him. So Christ appears to him now a third time. Lift up your eyes, please, which is what Lot did, apart from looking to the Lord for blessing. Lot lifted up his eyes and went where he thought he'd be benefited the most. But here, now Abram's told by the Lord, lift up your eyes, see from the place where you are. So he's at the same place between Ai and Bethel. And from there to the north and to the Negev, to the south and to the east and to the sea or the west. Because all the land which you are seeing, to you I am giving it. And to your descendant, singular, until now and forever. So in these verses, he's going to explain what he has in mind for Abram. And I will make your descendant like the dust, again, descendant is singular. I will make your descendant like the dust of the earth, which if a person is able to number the dust of the earth, all your descendant will be counted. If you can count the dust, then you can count what kind of a nation is going to come from you. Verse 17, imperative, arise, walk for yourself, another imperative. Arise, get up and start walking in the land for the length of it and the width of it, because I'm giving it to you. It's going to be yours. So go see what God has given to you. And Abram took down the tent and entered and dwelt by the terebinth tree of Mamre, which the trees, actually plural, the trees which are in Hebron. This is further south of Jerusalem. And he built there an altar to the Lord. So the footprint here is what God told him. So Abram, even as someone who has yet to believe in Christ for righteousness, Abram is learning as an unbeliever to seek the Lord. It's very important for people to have a relationship with the Creator. Now, the Creator does not want us living without him. This is true of believers and unbelievers. So you will come across people and you'll talk to them about the Lord. And they say, oh yeah, I believe in God. I was in this horrible car accident. And you know, I would have died if God hadn't have saved my life. Great. You know, our Creator wants us to have a relationship with him. He listens to the prayers of non-Christians. He wants non-Christians to listen to him and to follow his leadership. We're not talking about being declared righteous. We're not talking about getting the gift of everlasting life. We're talking about the Creator of the universe. So God sends the rain on the just and the unjust. God, the Creator, loves people. He loves sinners. If he doesn't love sinners, he doesn't love any of us. But there is a brand of theology that has an angry, distant God. And only the elect are the ones that are favored in this system. And another system of theology is all based upon what we do. Arminianism is based on what a person does, whether God's going to be favorable to them or whether he's going to withhold his favor. But God wants people involved with him, both believers and unbelievers. He wants a personal relationship with them that will culminate in them believing in Jesus for the forgiveness of sins because he rose again from the dead. And when they believe in him, and not themselves, and not their works, and not their abilities, that's when God declares them righteous. So what we're looking at here is a setting of the stage for Abram to finally come to the realization that God's promises and God's blessings are not a cooperative effort. He cannot do it. And it takes him till his mid-80s to finally figure that out. So by faith, my hope and prayer is that we figure that out earlier. So we don't have to go through the barrenness, the emptiness of secularization and all the rest of the things that Abraham goes through, that we can cut to the chase and believe in Jesus and he will give us righteousness because we know it doesn't come from us and we can't do it. So don't try to change the world. It'll only bring you heartache and problems. But when you believe in Jesus, you will get the gift of everlasting life.